It is Friday, May 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump steps up his feud with former FBI Director James Comey.
James Comey better hope there are no tapes, and he puts tapes in quotation marks, of our conversations before he starts leaking to the press.
In Saudi Arabia, there's mixed reaction to King Salman's decision to give women more rights, and reproductive technology can help restore vulnerable coral reefs. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump has escalated his feud with ousted former FBI Director James Comey and implied there are secret recordings of one of their private conversations from earlier this year. I spoke with VOA correspondent William Gallo, who's at the White House.
Right, really an astonishing claim when you think about it. A lot of it started last night with a report from the New York Times. It said there was a January meeting between ousted FBI Director Comey and Donald Trump, during which Trump asked Comey to pledge his loyalty. That coming from sources around Comey, not from Comey himself. Trump apparently responding to that in an early morning tweet saying, James Comey, better hope there are no tapes, and he puts tapes in quotation marks, of our conversations before he starts leaking to the press. Sort of a threat, an implied threat that he would release tapes of that conversation.
Is there any other sources? I mean, has anybody else spoken about this sort of alleged dinner meeting between the two?
No, there's not a whole lot of hard details on it. That was reported by the New York Times last night. I noticed that NBC this morning actually has that same report. They apparently have talked to some of the same people that Comey has talked to. But interestingly, James Comey, at least in the public statements he's made, it's not that it contradicts that account, but it's definitely a separate tone. You know, he said in his farewell letter to FBI employees this week that the president has the right to fire the FBI director at any time and that people shouldn't worry about it. You know, even if there was a legitimate reason or not a legitimate reason at all, this is something the president has the authority to do.
Well, also in an interview that Mr. Trump gave to MSNBC, he seemed to contradict earlier statements he'd made about the firing of Mr. Comey, saying this was something he had intended to do for a while.
Right. I mean, his staff, Trump's White House communications staff, initially cited the justification for this firing was actually a recommendation by the Justice Department that Comey had actually lost credibility, that, you know, it cited the Clinton email situation, and that was the White House line for a couple days. But whenever Donald Trump started talking to the media, what he said severely undermined or contradicted that. There was a quote for him. Whenever he decided to fire Comey, he said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story. It's an excuse by the Democrats, apparently linking his decision to fire Comey to the ongoing FBI investigation into Russia.
This must be a very interesting time to be at the White House covering all these issues, and it seems like the stories are just continuing to break about this subject.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's unlike anything I've ever seen. Every hour or so, it seems like there's another bombshell story. And a lot of these stories, you have to be careful because they're based on unnamed sources. That doesn't mean they're not credible, but, the standards for White House reporting are interestingly, there's a lot of gossip and a lot of rumor. There's a lot of serious stuff, too. It's sometimes hard to tell which is which.
VOA correspondent William Gallo reporting from the White House. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So what's the reaction on all of this today?
Well, we're seeing about half a dozen tweets going out earlier today from President Trump talking about the story that Bill Gallo just reported on with these supposed Comey tapes. President Trump tweeting, James Comey better hope that there are no tapes of our conversations before he starts leaking to the press. But another tweet that's getting a lot of attention is a tweet from President Trump where he said maybe the best thing to do would be to cancel all future press briefings and hand out written responses for the sake of accuracy. That follows a tweet where he says, with a lot happening in his presidency, it's not possible for his surrogates to stand at a podium with perfect accuracy. So that drew a lot of attention, people concerned that that might lead to limits on press and press access to the White House, something that this administration has been dealing with in the first 110 or 11 days so far. Another big Trump story on social media today. Amid this Russia interference probe, Trump's lawyers have come out and said that he had no income from Russia, with few exceptions, although they don't specify what those are. Now, that phrase, with few exceptions, has become a hashtag on social media, and many people are using it in some rather humorous ways. For instance, they said, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos is beloved by students, with few exceptions, referencing how she was booed while giving a commencement speech at a historically black university earlier this week. There was a fake Vladimir Putin account that I saw that said, I don't meddle in elections, with few exceptions. And then you have the funny historical jokes. The Titanic was unsinkable, with few exceptions.
Oh, no.
The Hindenburg was a smooth flight, with few exceptions. So lots of people jumping on this, having a very good time with that phrase and the mystery behind it. The serious angle to this is people are wondering what those exceptions are and what exactly that means, if there'll be any information released. But right now, people aren't counting on that. They're just counting on having some fun. Speaking of fun, another person who's been having fun with the Trump administration is actress Melissa McCarthy. Now, she's been quite notable in the past few months for portraying White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer in some guest appearances on this season of the hit sketch show Saturday Night Live. Well, this Saturday, she's hosting the show, so there's already a lot of speculation about what Sean Spicer-themed sketches she might do as host of Saturday Night Live this week. Well, we may have gotten a preview today, and this is something that you know, only in New York, as they say, you walk down the street and see something like this. This video across social media that shows Melissa McCarthy dressed as Sean Spicer riding a moving press podium down 58th Street in New York City. And you see her yelling at motorists in character as Sean Spicer. You see people taking pictures from the side of the street, all different angles of the video, even from above in those office buildings overhead as she's riding down the street. People are wondering if this is part of a skit, if this is something to promote the show ahead of the show tomorrow. A lot of questions still remain. I think a lot of people will be tuning in to figure that out. But it was a bizarre sight to see across the internet as Melissa McCarthy riding down the street. It looks like a podium set on a Segway, just cruising down the street in the middle of traffic. Very bizarre scene, but there's been a lot of bizarre things going on, I think.
Yeah, the press secretary hits the Big Apple.
Yes.
All right. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Suicide bomber kills 25 people in southwestern Pakistan. Israeli forces kill a Palestinian man during West Bank clashes. British hospitals are rocked by a massive cyber attack. And Christian teachers at a North Korean academy are in a vulnerable situation. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
If you want to look younger, a new study's advice is don't smile. While common knowledge suggests smiling exudes a more youthful appearance, research conducted by Ben-Gurion University provides scientific evidence that the opposite is true. The researchers gathered 40 university students and showed them images of people's faces with smiling, non-smiling, and surprised expressions. They were asked to rank them from youngest to oldest looking. The students rated smiling faces as the oldest, followed by images of non-smiling faces. Faces with surprised expressions were ranked as the youngest. The study suggests that smiling forms wrinkles around the eyes, making the person look older. On the other hand, someone making a surprised face pulls facial skin backward, eliminating those wrinkles. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at the rising value of Apple stock. Saudi King Salman's recent decision to grant women more rights won praise in some quarters and grumbles of discontent in others. Despite the newly won freedoms, though, Saudi women are far from enjoying the same rights as their Western counterparts, as Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
وجه خادم الحرمين الشريفين الملك سلمان بن عبد العزيز آل سعود بعدم مطالبة المرأة بالحصول على موافقة ولي أمرها.
Saudi TV announced with little fanfare the royal decree last week permitting women to make a certain number of decisions without seeking the permission of a male guardian. It said that the move conforms with Islamic Sharia law. Legal advisor Hassa al-Dulaimi told State TV the decision was based on a complaint over equality of the sexes in obtaining services from the government.
الصعوبات اللي كانت تواجه المرأة كان من أهمها هو طلب الإذن عند تقديم هذه الخدمات.
She says Saudi women will now be able to obtain various government services, including the right to enroll in a university, the right to open a bank account, and the right to leave prison after finishing a sentence without the agreement of a male guardian. Other freedoms, like requesting a passport, traveling abroad, or getting married, will still require the permission of a male family member. Writer Maha Bashan also told Saudi TV that the government, human rights groups, and the media need to better educate women about the rights they possess.
She
says women often are not aware of their rights, such as the right to equal wages for the same job or the right to work in about 30 different professions. She points out there are now 30 women who belong to the consultative Al-Shura Council. The decree granting women new rights followed the election of Riyadh to the UN Commission on the Status of Women at the end of April. Some human rights groups and activists criticized the UN vote. One Canadian lawmaker said she was appalled by the election of Saudi Arabia, calling the kingdom a gender segregationist theocracy. Human Rights Watch noted that three European governments voted to allow Riyadh to join the commission, but that the Belgian prime minister later regretted his government's decision. Human Rights Watch also questioned how a repressive Saudi government could serve on a commission whose stated goal is the promotion of gender equality and the empowerment of women. On social media, Saudi activists continue to wage a campaign to urge King Salman to relax what they perceive as the archaic restriction preventing women from driving. A number of women have driven their cars in public in recent years to protest the ban, but so far they have failed to sway public opinion.
قيادة المرأة هي ليست قيادة دينية بقدر ما هي قيادة علاقة بالمجتمع نفسه يقبلها أو يرفضها.
The King's son and Deputy Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman told journalists recently that it is a societal norm that forbids women from driving rather than a religious restriction. He added that Saudi society is still not convinced of the merits of women being allowed to drive, and that many think that there are serious negative consequences to allowing women to do so. Conservative Saudi religious leaders frequently oppose moves to give women more rights, although the late King Abdullah decided several years ago to give women the right to vote and run for local elections. Saudi society is still gender segregated, nevertheless, and women are required to be covered from head to toe while in public. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
While the NASDAQ Composite Index here in the United States continued in record territory, tech giant Apple became the first American company to reach a stock market value or capitalization of more than $800 billion. That's based on a company's stock price and the number of shares it has. Apple shares have been driven higher in recent months on expectations of its next-generation iPhone, due in September. According to the financial investment publication Barron's, Apple's stock is up more than 57,000% since it went public in 1980. Its value is up 7.5 times from a decade ago. The company's revenue grew in the most recent fiscal quarter, even though iPhone sales fell and its stock has gained nearly 30% just this year. Shane Oliver, chief economist and head of investment strategy for AMP Capital in Sydney, Australia, tells International Edition's Victor Beattie, using an iPhone while the Cupertino, California-based firm has been massively successful, doesn't guarantee continued growth.
There's no doubt that Apple has seen massive growth, both in terms of its own success, profitability and sales, but also that being reflected in market capitalization. The share market is quite clearly factoring in further gains ahead, and that's what this very high capitalization number represents. Of course, the fact that it's gone through this very high number doesn't mean that it's smooth sailing ahead for Apple. Often after very, very strong gains, when everyone knows the story being good, that can often be a sign of a turndown. But for the time being, I guess the reality is that people are still buying Apple devices, and as long as they keep up the innovation process and people like their products, then their success will continue.
It took a little longer to reach $800 billion from the $700 billion mark. Are Apple sales slowing down? Is the smartphones market saturated now and it's going to have to perhaps diversify?
There's certainly a risk there that the big boom that came from first the iPod and then the smartphones and the spread of those smartphones throughout the global population, that big boost is slowing down. You know, we've now got a point where big chunks of the global population have smartphones, including iPhones, and therefore you've got to find new innovation, new devices to keep the demand coming. So that's certainly an issue, I think, going forward. The growth will be slower, and that will be reflected in the share market capitalization as well. I mean, to get up to the $900 billion mark, I think, will take a little bit longer than it took to even get to this mark from 700. So I think the reality is, yes, it will probably slow down. Yes, it's a great sign that Apple has sort of got to these sorts of levels. But as we've seen historically, just because you go through a big round number doesn't necessarily mean anything about your fundamentals. It's just a sign that Apple is doing pretty well at the moment, and that's being reflected in the share market.
As you probably remember, about a decade ago, Shane, PetroChina briefly became the first global company with market capitalization of more than $1 trillion. How likely will Apple reach that level?
I have no doubt that Apple will reach the $1 trillion level. It's just a question of when.
Friday, the price of an Apple share was selling for $156. With its more than 5 billion shares, a share price of $202 would bring Apple above the $1 trillion in market capitalization. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
The world's coral reefs are in danger, basically because of pollution. In San Francisco, the California Academy of Sciences has launched a promising effort to save the world's coral reefs using in vitro fertilization. Jan Sluzer tells us more.
Coral reefs serve many purposes. They provide nurseries for nearly a quarter of the ocean's fisheries, help protect shorelines from storms, and offer underwater wonders for snorkelers and divers.
To me, a coral reef is one of the most magical and beautiful places on Earth. It's this incredible city of organisms. We've all learned to live together. All these animals are competing to try and take over space and try to get access to sunlight, to nutrients in the water, all of those things.
But Bart Shepard says coral reefs are also under great stress due to human activity and increasingly warm and acidic ocean water. Various methods have been tried to bring back reefs. The most successful so far has been artificially accelerating a natural process called fragmentation. Researchers purposefully break off coral branches, allow the pieces to recover and grow, and then plant them back onto the reef. But that reduces genetic diversity and the coral's resilience. So, the Hope for Reefs crew turned to a unique method pioneered by the coral conservation group, SeaCor International. It uses in vitro fertilization to restore the health of dying coral reefs.
We actually have proven that you can go and collect gametes, sperm and eggs, fertilize them and grow them in a laboratory for a short period of time, plant that baby coral back out on the reef, and within 5 years it will grow up and spawn with its wild counterparts on the reefs.
Corals only spawn once a year, at night, around a full moon. During those couple of nights, millions of the coral sex cells float to the surface. But Shepard says more than 99% don't make it.
What we're able to do is intercede at a point where most of the sperm and egg are just going to be eaten by fish. We put a net over the coral and we collect those sperm and eggs and we bring them back to the lab and cross-fertilize them and go from there.
Hope for Reefs doesn't stop with restoration. Shepard says educating local governments and community stakeholders to save their coral reefs is key to the success of the project, and time is crucial.
We need
that report by Jan Sluzer. That is our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In 1953, then U.S. President Dwight Eisenhower, in a speech to the U.N. General Assembly, proposed the Atoms for Peace program, including the establishment of what would become the International Atomic Energy Agency, or IAEA, to facilitate the exchange of nuclear technology for peaceful uses and safeguard against their diversion to weapons. Since that time, the United States has been a leader in international civil nuclear cooperation and the peaceful uses of nuclear energy. It is the single largest contributor to technical cooperation activities of the IAEA, helping member states apply nuclear technology to address national development needs. The assurances provided by the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and the safeguards of the International Atomic Energy Agency have helped make today's vibrant exchange of nuclear energy, science, and technology possible. On May 9th, the U.S. delegation delivered its statement on the peaceful uses of nuclear energy to the first session of the Preparatory Committee for the 2020 Review Conference of the Parties to the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons. Andrew Schofer, chargé d'affaires of the U.S. mission to international organizations in Vienna, reaffirmed the U.S. government's $50 million pledge to the Peaceful Uses Initiative for 2015 to 2020 and reported specific progress toward that commitment. Mr. Schofer said in his statement, "The effects of cooperation have been real and felt worldwide. We have helped fund important capacity-building efforts to address urgent needs, such as the Ebola and Zika crises, global disparities in access to cancer therapy, transboundary animal diseases and water shortages, food safety and quality, and environmental effects from the Fukushima nuclear incident." In addition to supporting such life-saving programs through the IAEA, the United States has 50 partners and 23 agreements on bilateral nuclear cooperation. IAEA states with nuclear power programs can make full use of the international commercial market for nuclear fuel. The United States already operates the American Assured Fuel Supply. The IAEA has nearly completed the creation of a low-enriched uranium reserve to provide another international mechanism to ensure reliable fuel services. Additionally, fuel from such reserves can be made available in the event of a severe supply disruption. Through programs that facilitate scientific exchange and building partnerships that safeguard against proliferation, the United States and all member states benefit from peaceful nuclear cooperation, which the Non-Proliferation Treaty